Hello and a warm welcome everybody to our Wednesday webinar. This is the second of our global conversations, part two. We hosted the first back in April and it was such a success and we had so much great stuff from so many of you that we decided to host another one and actually make it a regular fixture. So expect these every month. From the feedback, it seemed it was the first time that everyone felt truly connected as a global community, which actually is interesting that the uncertain times that we're in has given us the opportunity to absolutely do that. So some positives come out of it, which is always good. So we think it's really important to, as an industry, be able to discuss the challenges and opportunities that we're facing currently through COVID times and beyond. So as always, we've gathered an esteemed panel of brilliant people from around the world to take part in a conversation, which also means you will all get to take part as well. We think now, more than ever, it's important to support each other, be brave. And our agenda of Brave Together has never been so apt, which we're really pleased about. So before I introduce everybody, just want to see who is here from around the world. So it would be great to use the chat function. It also allows us to test the chat function and let us know how you're feeling and where you're dialing in from or zooming in from even. There we go. So who's going to tell me where they're in? I'm in Twickenham, by the way. Oh, we've got Portugal, Edinburgh, feeling great, India, Singapore, love this, Dubai, lots from Dubai, Mumbai, Henley-on-Thames, how you doing? Feeling good, lots and lots of positivity, fantastic. So I'm going to introduce our panelists and ask them to give us a word as well. My word right now is anxious, because usually my little boy is out when I'm doing these calls, because he tends to make a guest appearance. However, today he can't be, so if you hear Frozen around the corner, some sounds, that is because he is watching Frozen and the likelihood is he will be joining us at some point. So I'm feeling anxious but also positive that we're having this chat. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce all of our lovely panelists. So Carl, come and join us. Carl's in Hong Kong, and introduce yourself. Hello, Carl.
Hi, Gemma. Hello. Hi, everyone. Good to be here. So I'm going to start off with how am I feeling with one word, and I think it would be grateful. Grateful to be here, and also grateful that at least in Hong Kong, we're starting to see the end of COVID, and we're starting to come out of COVID, which is a bit of a relief. So grateful is my keyword today.
Lovely, and you're and representing our board and also HSBC.
Yes. So who am I? I work at HSBC. I'm head of digital as a channel, which ultimately means communications, messaging, and sales. And I also sit on the Marketing Society board in Asia Pacific.
Brilliant. He's been a member for many years when he was in London as well. So welcome, Carl. Next up, we have Adriana in New York. Come and join us and tell us how you're feeling and what you do.
Hi, Gemma. Welcome. I'm Adriana. I am the vice chair of the Marketing Society in New York. Have been that for a couple of years now. My other job is to be the head of marketing for a new streaming service that we are going to be bringing to market this year from Discovery Inc. That we're very excited about. And I know the world needs another streaming service right now because this is all we're doing, is staying home and streaming things. And I actually have two words. I hope that's okay. I am feeling optimistic and energized. New York is finally, and the US is finally, feels like we're coming out of this fog. And although the city is not open yet, there is a lot of excitement in the air and a lot of positivity.
Love that. Thank you so much. Right, next up, let's get Derek calling in from Scotland. Where are you?
Good afternoon. Thanks
Hi,
for
Derek.
Having me. So I'm Derek. I work at NatWest Group, formerly known as RBS Group. So it's banking group in the UK. We have Royal Bank of Scotland and the NatWest Group of banks. And I head up the content and social teams at the bank. So I look after all of our social media and content for campaigns. And I think Adriana stole my words. I mean, you know, optimistic is absolutely, but I would say, you know, encouraged as well, you know, particularly encouraged with the way that I mean, from a person point of view, I think the way that my colleagues and the bank has responded to the crisis, but also just the way that we're emerging from it as an industry, I think is really encouraging to see how things are going to pan out. And I would say I'm looking forward to what's going to happen next, because I think there will be a really positive bounce back.
Lovely. Thank you, Derek. And I just see that Sharway's popped up. So hello, we're just doing an introduction. So lovely to see you, Sharway. Introduce yourself and say what you're doing, where you're from. You're on mute. I know, I knew I was going to say that quite a lot in this call, but right now you're on mute. You're still on mute.
All right. Can you hear me now?
Yes. Perfect.
Okay, Gemma. Good afternoon to you. This is Xiaowei. I'm from Shell. I'm in charge of the regional external relations based in Singapore, originally from China.
Lovely. And also on our board in Singapore as well, your other important
yes,
job.
Yes, indeed. one of the latest joiner. Yeah.
Oh, wonderful. Right, next up we've got in London, coming to you from sunny London, our global chair, Craig.
Hiya. Hi. Well, I think I've just been introduced, to be honest, but yeah. Craig, and until recently I was customer director at John Lewis. I left a couple of months ago, but as Gemma said, I'm chair of the Marketing Society here in London, and I was going to say grateful, Kyle, so good choice. I am feeling grateful. But the other thing I think I'm feeling is upbeat. I'm excited about this, and also excited about how the world, I think, is changing.
Lovely. Thank you so much, Craig. Next up, we have Mike from Dubai.
Hi, Gemma. Hi, everybody. Can Hello. You hear me? Hi, guys.
Yes.
I'm Mike. I run Sony Music Entertainment Middle East, and I also am vice chair for the Marketing Society here in the Middle East in Dubai. So it's great to be here, everybody. My two words, I'm feeling competitive and I'm feeling creative. Kind of echo what Adriana was saying. It's a very exciting time for us in the content business. And so I'm feeling creative and I'm feeling competitive.
Love that. Thank you. And I love the fact you've missed the brief as well and gone for two words. It's a typical cool marketeers, all of you. Now I'm insulting the audience. lovely. And last but certainly no means least, where's Juhi? Come and join us.
Hi, Gemma. And
Hi.
Welcome to all our audience. Okay, my name is Juhi Garvara. I manage corporate marketing for Philips in India. And
yes.
That includes brand communication and digital marketing. The one word that describes how I'm feeling is excited, because I take this as an opportunity where we are right now in this pandemic, specifically considering we haven't really peaked in India. There is a lot of excitement and opportunity around what we could do.
Lovely. And we're particularly excited because hot off the press, we haven't announced this yet, but Juhi's becoming our new India chair as well. So very excited about that, and congratulations and welcome to us all. Wonderful. So let's get going with the brilliant. So let's get going with the conversation. The way it's going to work is obviously we've only got 45 minutes or so, but as always we love having questions from you, our audience, so feel free to use the Q&A section to answer your questions, and please make them pithy so we can get as many as possible, and I promise you I will try and get as many as possible in, and just don't say who your question is directed at as well. Ideally use the chat function just for the chat and the questions for the questions, the Q&A. So Carl, I'm going to start with you. I think it's fair to say we've never experienced anything like this before, any of us ever, and didn't think we would. How have you found things both professionally and personally, you know, in terms of both challenging and rewarding?
Yeah, look, I actually look back and I can't see a more challenging period, both personally and also professionally. I've not lived through a pandemic. I think I've seen a stat which said that there's a pandemic every 100 years. And so I'm not even expecting to live to the next one, hopefully. I'll start with personally. Personally, it's been really interesting and enlightening for me. So in Hong Kong, we started with controlled movement and also kids not going to school really early at the end of January, beginning of Feb. So my kids have not been to school since the beginning of February. And I was not designed to be a teacher. So juggling work and during quite an intense period and also kids has been really, really, really a challenge. And there's a temptation to suffer from parent guilt. Am I educating them? Right. Am I helping them? From a professional point of view, let's think a bit around kind of our customers, and they are going through, many customers are going to go through impact on their income. Some will be unemployed. During this period, many of those customers can't go to the branches of banks because of controlled moving, those branches are closed. And also during that period, also there is governments announcing and launching relief packages to support those customers. So if you think about what my day looked like before and what it looks like now, I had to do a real pivot towards supporting our customers during this just challenging period. And thankfully, I'm sure we'll go to it a bit later, but we leveraged the power and strength of digital to be able to service our customer and continue to give them a great experience with our bank.
Lovely, and we'll definitely touch on that later. And I love what you said about parent guilt. We shouldn't feel it, should we? We can do what we can do. And I think that's great advice. Derek, in the same sector, I know that RBS have really embraced the way of working since COVID times. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, can reflect exactly what Carla was saying. You know, I think for us, you know, we went very, very quickly and it happened very quickly for everyone. But, you know, it went from, you know, we posted one thing about, you know, the COVID incident, I think early March. And then suddenly, you know, we were all in lockdown. We were all working from home and we had to completely rethink our plans for the next few months. So as well as, you know, everybody working from home that could work from home. Yes, we're lucky that we were able to keep most of the branches on some sort of service. But obviously with lockdown, people couldn't visit the branches. So very quickly, we had to think about how do we make sure we're servicing the customers that need to be serviced through digital channels that would normally use branches. So straight away, you know, a lot was jumped into action to just think about how do we upskill people that are just not used to using, you know, social and digital and mobile banking. While all of us are working from home, we're having to completely rethink our plans. You know, we're working with our agencies remotely. And to create content, which is still really important, we're having to rely on people to you know, home shoot content. So to not having, you know, on location shoots and all that kind of thing. So, you know, so many different moving parts. And of course, nobody knew what was going to happen tomorrow or the next week or the following month. And as well as the government announcing the new schemes that were coming out that we had to obviously service and fulfill and communicate to our customers. So yes, it was a huge shock, but I think, you know, I'm incredibly proud of the way that my colleagues and I guess the organization has responded and really focused on people, both customers and colleagues.
Thank you. That's great. Hearing a lot of focus on our customers, which we're definitely going to move on to a little bit more. Craig, our theme of Brave Together, I mentioned it at the beginning. It's never been sort of, we've never resonated so much with it over the, you know, in the last few months. Through a Brave lens, which brands do you think have really stood out over the coming months, and tell us a bit more about that?
Well, you know, I had a good think about this, and actually just bearing out with the last couple of examples, I think my overall reflection is actually I feel really encouraged by how brands have responded in general. I hate to generalize too much, but in general, I think that multiple brands here in the UK and across the world have really stepped up and responded to the crisis in a way that I suspect neither they nor we could ever have imagined just a few months ago. And many have changed their brand behavior, both in terms of the fundamentals of what they exist for, or their brand purpose, if you like, but also in terms of how they engage, as Derek just said, with their customers and their employees. And I think the theme is, and just in a much more human, much more empathetic way. So I think that brands overall are recognising what really matters, and perhaps the things that they felt couldn't be touched before, places they couldn't go, they're now going. And there are brands on the call like NatWest, and indeed I know Mike from Sony Music might have an example later, but for me, some of the brands that just call out are, you know, some big gesture brands, like the global brands like Unilever and Airbnb and Nike, who are literally donating hundreds of millions towards people affected by the virus, which seems like, you know, a bit throwaway, but it's incredibly important that those brands step up and take those actions. Then there's things like fashion manufacturers. It's kind of fascinating as having come from that background. So brands like Nordstrom and Gap in the US, John Lewis here in the UK, and then luxury brands like Burberry and Gucci and Prada, who have repurposed their entire manufacturing outfits to be focused not on the high-end, slightly superfluous things we all have in our lives, towards that vital PPE that our health workers need. And so that's been a massive shift logistically, but also in terms of the purpose for those organizations. And in fact, some of you may have seen that Gucci just yesterday have decided to move away from the season-based fashion shows, 5 that they have a year, to just 2 a year, on the basis that they've had a time to reflect, and they just feel that actually they've been encouraging an unsustainable desire for fashion, for high-end fashion. So, it's called anything very different.
Yeah, the opportunity to streamline has been.
Yeah.
Were you about to say, I thought you'd finish, sorry.
Apart from those big gestures, and there's a couple of other more quirky, sort of very human things that have gone on. I love that Crocs have been donating 10,000 pairs of Crocs a day to key workers across the world.
Yeah, brilliant.
What health workers wear. And then there's a brand called Pret A Manger, which is in other countries, but mainly here in the UK. And I love that they've been donating money and that sort of thing. But the thing that really struck me was that the first restaurants they reopened were right next to hospitals. And they reopened them not only just to sell their products, but to sell bread and milk and butter at 50% off and give free coffees to NHS workers here in the UK. And it's that kind of behaviour that just shows real empathy and human understanding. Yeah. Those are the brands that will sustain.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I love that. Thank you. The human and the connectedness, and also the opportunity to streamline and realise how you can be more effective, seeing that across the board, which has been brilliant. Juhi, as we were talking about before, you haven't actually reached the peak in India yet. So how have people been reacting to the situation, and how have you been doing?
So while we haven't reached the peak in India, the lockdown started really early.
Yeah.
So in the end of March itself, the first phase of the lockdown started. And that impacted a lot of businesses that run out of here. So with Philips, we've got the consumer business, and then there is the B2B business. So with consumer business, everything kind of just stopped because all stores were shut, nothing was moving, their houses were closed. So while digital is the only way for people to consume information, digital sale did halt for a while. E-commerce also was not the way to buy. Nothing was happening. So what we realized was engaging with customers now is extremely important, because that way they remember you later. And the sales which are not happening now, you could leverage it later. So what we tried doing was, with a lot of our influencers that we work with, we tried to create a lot of content that shows how they are using our products during the lockdown. Just to state an example, the Indian cricket captain is someone we work with as an influencer. He's our brand ambassador. So we got him to do a video of trimming his beard at home. And that went viral on Instagram. So now with the lockdown easing up and e-commerce just having picked up, we have a lot of orders for beard trimmers. And it wouldn't have happened if we did not do this influencer engagement. We did a similar activity around Mother's Day for the Advent brand. So our way of working right now is make sure you engage with your consumer, make sure they don't forget you. So once this eases up, you can make up for the lost time and the lost sales.
Yeah, love that. And seize every opportunity is there. I'm seeing, Sharway, that you are nodding a lot through this section. So tell us what's happening with you and obviously the wider community in Singapore as well.
Yes, thanks, Gemma. I think... a lot of the colleagues that just now mentioned that this is unprecedented kind of crisis or thing that's happening. But if I'm wearing my sort of Asian hat and then, you know, also look at it globally, I think we're probably in the same storm, but not on the same boat, because everyone is in a different pace. The outbreak started in China. So that's why, you know, we responded very early on in China, carrying our people, carrying our customers. Now they are work out of the easing off. Singapore is also working towards that. South Korea already out of that, but nonetheless, wherever each country at whichever dot are you on the curve, I think government will be responded differently. The local COVID situation will be vary quite a lot. So where Shell operates, we will really be in sync with the local situation. Nonetheless, I think one common thing which some of the colleagues already mentioned is front and center are the health and safety of our people and our customer. Those are the key things that remain relevant throughout so far.
Yeah, so back to the human side and customer.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Exactly. Mike, this has obviously had a huge impact on the entertainment industry with festivals and concerts being cancelled all over the place. Share how you've been pivoting your business and reframing things. Because when we were talking before, you had lots of interest in things that you guys are doing at Sony.
Yeah, I think it's like the guys have been saying, there's a human side to this and a business side to this. Our first priority is on the human side. So I think from day one, it was about making sure that our artists and our people are safe and taken care of and supported. So we've been doing some great things around the world on that side. On the business, and I'll get to that in a second and we can talk later on it. On the business side, obviously the live business makes up around 50% of the music industry, worth about $12 billion this year. And 50% is on the streaming side. Now, Sony Music, we fall on the streaming side, the content side of the industry. And the outlook is fairly positive on that. What we're seeing is a lot of consumption. We're seeing a lot of service increase. We're seeing a lot of subscriber increase. Spotify recently announced that their numbers were up for March. I mean, the data is early, but the signs are that consumers are taking on board lots of different types of content at levels that previously haven't been seen before. You may have seen the Twitch numbers, 1.6 billion hours of Twitch watch time in April. It's quite astonishing. And so what's happening is that we are supporting our artists in their endeavors to A, reach fans in different and unique ways. So Travis Scott performed within the game Fortnite 2 weeks ago to 12.3 million gamers. He did a virtual performance in the game Fortnite. We've seen our artist Diplo did a live music tour and festival through Twitch, 150,000 users logged into that. And we're continuing to support our artists all over the world in their partnerships and new endeavors. Just this morning at 5 a.m., I was on a Zoom call with a very big named artist in Los Angeles who was playing his album to about 35 of us, which wouldn't normally have happened. But it shows that the connectivity we've got as a label with our people, with our artists, and just making sure we support them in their endeavors to overcome these challenges, because they're human like the rest of us. They all have the same challenges that we've got really at the end of the day.
Yeah, and 5 a.m. That must have been interesting. We did you all stay smiling?
If you can't get up at 5 a.m. to have a 1-on-30 Zoom call with a Grammy-winning artist who talks through an album, I don't think we should be working in the music business. So
Love that. Perks the business. Adriana, what about you? How does this resonate from you, obviously, from a content streaming point of view, what Mike just said, and how things are with you in New York?
Yeah, sure. So I relate a lot to what Mike has said, certainly from the business side. I work at Discovery, and... So a couple of things happened. I'm just going to talk about the business side of it for now. From my personal side, I work on a new streaming service. What happened with us is that we decided that we needed to put the streaming service into market earlier. So our schedules got really crunched, and we are actually busier now than we were pre-COVID lockdown. And it's really been miraculous to see how well the company functions with everyone in 5,000 separate offices, essentially, and how we can actually develop into a brand new product that doesn't exist without anyone ever meeting live or being in the same room. So that's been pretty incredible. On the content side, in some ways, Discovery is very, very lucky because we have content people really want to see and really love. And we are mostly real life content, which means it's easier to produce. We don't have big productions and et cetera. And we have talent who is eager to keep producing content. So we've had our talent literally using their children, their nannies, their husbands as camera people, as grips, as lighting people, as makeup artists. And I'll give you one great example. In April, amid lockdown, we called Amy Schumer, the comedian, and we said, hey, the Food Network said, hey, would you like to do a show with us? And she said, I would love to do a show with you. My husband's a chef. I want to learn how to cook. And within a month, in lockdown on Martha's Vineyard, she and her husband started it. It launched on May 11th. She and her husband started their show, Cooking with Amy, or Amy Schumer Learns How to Cook. And it's been an amazing success. Variety said it's like the show you have to watch during quarantine. And it's just an example of how we've had to be really nimble and really able to not only pivot, but to realize, you know what, it's not going to be the same production values. It's not going to be this, but it's okay. That's fine. We're still entertaining. People are very receptive to this. And our talent has really responded and done a really fabulous job. So it's been, in a very strange way, it's been really fun to watch the creativity that this kind of awfulness has required and how people have really stepped up to it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Craig, if we look back at previous challenging times we've had, so the global recession in 2007-09, what learnings do you think we can take from then to apply to today's landscape? Because everything I'm hearing is that, you know, we're all reframing, we're all pivoting, we're being more effective, efficient, we're doing some good stuff. So what learnings do you think we can take?
Well, look, I think the first thing to say is that there is really nothing like this. I hope we have to wait at least 100 years for another one, but I mean, if you look back at anything remotely similar, like the financial crash or maybe 9/11, in those moments, my reflection, I just joined in, Lehman Brothers went down, and all the anchor points that consumers and employees have, I call them anchor points, the things that remind you that life is normal, they're taken away, and they're taken away quite savagely, and they cause people to reel, and everything that was the norm is no longer the norm. And of course, that directly challenges what you believe in, and particularly who you trust. And who would have, you remember back in 2008 when we saw, you know, queues hundreds of meters long, or people waiting to take all their life savings out of banks? I mean, my HSBC and RBS colleagues will no doubt remember. And you know, you just could never have believed that would happen, and that's because people's beliefs had been truly shaken. And so I think, reflecting on that, and this is much more acute, I think what that means for consumers is that they are going to still want to consume. They're going to still want to buy things, but they're going to be very, very careful about how they do that. They're going to be really demanding, really discerning, and very considered about who they buy for and what they buy. And that's been a long-term trend anyway, but it's just going to be amplified even more as we come out of this. And then in terms of brands, I think... that means that their behavior today is incredibly important. I touched on it earlier, but what they do and also what they say, how you engage, how you inspire is important. And I think consumers will get behind the brands that do the right thing and are seen to do the right thing by their customers and really crucially by their employees. And you know, it's really struck me as I come from a business called John Lewis, which is a partnership and its employees own the business. There are very, very few businesses that run like that, but over the last few months, one of the real positives I've seen is that businesses, like some of the ones that are represented here, have taken their employees and put them front and center in their advertising and across lots of communication. And that can only be a positive thing if it carries on. And that's the thing. Brands will be judged by how they continue to behave after this finishes.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't agree more. I'm going to move on to us as leaders and then start with you, Sharwe. How do you think... how has this pandemic changed you as a leader? You know, good or bad, you can be honest. And what do you think you've learned from it?
Well, I mean, it's quite a lot of condensed, I think, experience as a leader. First of all, it's all happened very quickly and all started from Asia. So there's nothing we could sort of, there's no playbook that you can do, right? So as I mentioned earlier, you know, people remain front and center. And in my, you know, regional role, I have three P's in the normal time that as a leader that guided me. So I talk about people, plan, and performance, right? That's how we manage overall. But I think given the pandemic situation, people again coming that into that center, given the social distancing, what I have done more, which I normally haven't done previously, is more skip level conversation. So it's not just my direct reports. I will go down the organization level to reach out to a bit more frontline people. So in that sense, one thing I took away from those is really, even though there's a social distancing and a virtual setting up, but I think virtually the proximity bring me closer to, you know, the bigger community that I'm leading. So that's an upside, and I actually get quite a lot of inspiration from the frontline, because they are the ones dealing with our community, dealing with our customers on a daily basis. And there's quite a lot of good ideas that I pick up from those individual conversation. And I feel people feel inspired, yeah? So that's one thing. The other thing I feel quite strongly about is the learner mindset, yeah? Because we haven't experienced this before, so we don't have an answer for many things. So in a way, I preach for this for my team is, you know, let's learn together. Yeah, there are many things we don't have an answer for. That's fine, but we are all in this together. So that also shows a bit of vulnerability. As an Asian, it's very uncomfortable, I have to tell you, because as an Asian leader, you're supposed to know everything, or people expect you to know everything. So I guess that's the kind of balance or dilemma that I come across. But I think putting on the learner hat and the learner mindset probably will, you know, encourage everybody to say, it's fine, we don't know, but let's, you know, go through this together.
You're reminding me of a great quote, be you so others can be them. So you're yourself and encourage others. I love that. And it reminds me also of when we brought the topic of mental health to Singapore for the first time in the marketing industry, how at the beginning, it took some time to break down those walls for people to really be honest and vulnerable. So what you just said there about vulnerability and leadership is so important. And it was brilliant to see that just through that event. Thank you. Derek, what about you? How do you think the leaders of the future will differ as a result of this pandemic?
Yeah, I mean, I think we can learn a lot from how we've all reacted over the last couple of months. You know, I think to Craig's point, it's been great to see brands putting colleagues front and centre. And I think that's the way it should be, whether or not, you know, they're seen all the time. But I think from a brand and a leadership perspective, the people, you know, that you work with are the most important commodity you have. And I think what we've seen in the bank is very much a kind of, I guess where previously, maybe if you go back to the kind of, you know, financial crisis, back to that point in time, it's very much a top-down approach. Mm. You know, and everything, all the instructions and everything came from the top and the leaders. Now I think what people are realizing, and this has probably been evolving over the last couple of years, but I think even more so now it's just come to a point, is that the leaders don't necessarily have all the answers. In fact, it's the collective people that have the answers within the organization. And if you look at our frontline, for example, so our frontline includes branches, but also includes call centers. You know, anybody that is in contact with customers as the frontline, they have all the answers, not the leaders. And I think that's what's been realized. And if you can harness that power of the collective population, you know, I think that can provide far more insight to an organization than just decisions made at a leadership level. And I think what the pandemic's meant is that, you know, the structure has become much more agile and lean in order to make rapid decisions, but those rapid decisions are informed by the front line as well. And I think I'd love to see that going forward, because I think that can really empower, you know, colleagues at all levels within the organization, because they then realize that they have a massive part to play and they're not just some small cog in a big wheel. And what's been brilliant within our organization is that a lot of you in the UK will understand, we've got a new chief exec in Alison Rose, and she's actually been spending time writing handwritten notes to colleagues because they're doing some fantastic work. And it's not just, you know, a couple here and there. There's some fantastic notes going out across the business to people that are going above and beyond. And that's just fantastic, because I think, you know, she obviously realizes the importance that these people are playing in the roles that they're doing. So I think just, you know, taking this forward, it'll be great to see much less of a top-down approach and much more information guided by the population within the organization and particularly the front line.
be nice if that's reflected in politics as well, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's another conversation. Yeah. Yeah, you just reminded me of my great boss, predecessor, always said, you know, the power of a handwritten thank you goes so far. So
huge. It's huge. And even though it's handwritten, like, it's shared digitally, right? So you take a picture of it and it goes on all the WhatsApp groups and, you know, internal news. So it's brilliant.
Yeah, you just got to have good handwriting if you want to do that now, I guess.
Exactly.
Yeah. Juhi, what do you think in terms of leadership? How do you think the, you know, great leadership looks in terms of uncertainty? And what are you seeing coming out of it and your own leadership style as well?
During this time, the biggest thing that we've learned as leaders is empathy, not just towards what we work on, but towards everything in life. And, you know, it's there is this triple duty of care that we're following right now in everything that we do, and that is care towards our people, care towards our business and our customer, these three. And just following that and trying to see how we care for each of these three aspects has completely made most of us change our leadership style. And, you know, one other thing that I'd like to bring up here is something that I've been remembering a lot lately. One of the first few organizations that I worked for, that was Yahoo back in the day, that was a fun place to work. And that was an organization where it had four core values defined. And one of those four core values of running the business was fun. And I think about it more and more today, and I think most organizations should include that in their core values, because these days when you're glued to your screen all day, you've got the headphones or earphones stuck to you all day, right? You forget that if you do not have fun with what you do, you're going to just burn out soon. And most employees these days are facing that. So I try to incorporate that in most of the things we do. Our organization's also trying to do that. Employee engagement is part of what I do, is part of my role. So we try and do a lot of fun events, engage with people, get them off their screen, get their families involved. So it's not just work. You truly enjoy what you do.
I love that. Got to love what you do. And it's only when you love what you do, you'll be truly exceptional, Steve Jobs.
Absolutely.
I often quote that one. Adriana, do you think the pandemic will change the way we work forever? And more, you know, you were talking before when we had a call before about the changes you're making at Discovery. So share a little bit with our audience about what you're planning to do.
Yeah, sure. And let me say, I agree with a lot of what's been said and almost everything of what's been said. I think it has changed leadership styles. For the better. What I find fascinating is that I feel closer now to my colleagues and my teammates and my direct reports, et cetera, because every day I'm invited into their homes. I know a part of their lives now that usually was kept separate. And it's, I think, just made us all a lot closer. On top of which, surviving something together definitely bonds people, right? There's just nothing else that comes close to that. But I have a much greater appreciation for the whole person as opposed to the person who shows up at the office. And I think that is something that hopefully we all take with us and remember that people are full people. They have full lives with a lot of other stresses. And tapping into that and being empathetic and being understanding of that only gets better work, only makes you a better leader. And honestly, to Judy's point, it also allows you to have more fun together because you feel closer to each other. Mm-hmm. So Discovery, I think, has done a really wonderful job of keeping everyone aware of what's going on. We have weekly town halls with our CEO, 10,000 employees worldwide, Zoom into this call. He talks, he always has. Usually one of our talent show up to like rile everybody up and make everyone excited about the business. And then the head of HR gets on and tells us exactly what's going on, city by city, what's opening, what's closing, what's happening in New York. It's made everyone feel like I may not have a lot of control, but at least I'm aware of what's being considered. Mm-hmm. And I think that's all you can give people right now, right? Because none of us really know what's going to happen. So I think they've done a fantastic job of that. They try really hard to bring whatever fun they can. It's not always easy through Zoom, but they do that. And the other thing they've done is a survey to find out how do people feel? What do they want? What's working? What isn't working? How do they see the future evolving? And what's come out very clearly is that people don't mind working from home. Now, they don't necessarily want to work from home 100% of the time, but they want the flexibility of doing that once in a while.
Yeah.
So I know that we were supposed to move to a new headquarters in New York City, which of course is delayed, but I know they're rethinking that space and rethinking who's going to be there. And building in that kind of flexibility, I think is really important.
Yeah.
I think the days of a Yahoo in the US who, you know, when I forget her name now, I'm sorry, the CEO, when she stopped the people from working from home because she didn't trust that they were doing their jobs and forced everyone to come into offices, I think those days are gone. I don't think anyone can claim that anymore.
Yeah, no, I think it's so true. Things are changing. I've noticed there's lots of really great comments. There's a real agreed consensus on this with the panelists and also with you as an audience. But do feel free to ask some questions. In the questions, there's some comments, but not questions. So if you want to ask any of our panelists questions, do pop them in. But thank you. Thank you very much, Adrian. I'm just going to move to you, Carl. Obviously, you're a little bit further ahead, as we talked about earlier, and you're about to go back into the office. I think you were going back yesterday, but that's changed. But you're about to go back in. So what changes have you made, and what changes have HSBC made to prepare for this?
Yeah, before I talk about the changes, I just want to build up on Adriana's point also around kind of what COVID has done to leadership styles. And in particular, I was really surprised that the corporate facade with my team and my colleagues has dropped, because I see pets and kids jumping on Zoom calls. And I'm fairly new to HSBC, and check-ins is really a big part of the culture. And what I really loved is that during this period, we've dialed up the check-ins. And literally I'll start off, if I'm feeling vulnerable or having a bad day, I'll kick it off with that honesty. And you know, for people's mental health, that's going to be really quite important. Understanding their personal circumstances is really quite important. So I thought that was a really good point. In terms of us returning back, yes, we have started to return back at HSBC in Hong Kong. We're doing it in a phased and measured approach, so batches of individuals. I think the most important learning I have is that if any one of our colleagues or employees are feeling uncomfortable about returning, they're not forced to return back. We're doing it gently. We're giving a lot of guidance and support, you know, from the obvious stuff: masks, hand sanitizer. And they could return back in the first phase, the second or third phase, and like that, we're also continuing on the frequent check-ins to make sure that our staff and our employees are really comfortable with the plans that we have in place. But we're still early stages, you know, we've just really started to return back now.
Oh, well, hopefully you'll share with us how it's all going so we can all learn as a community. That'd be amazing. Mike, I'm going to move to you now. What do you think businesses need to do to ensure success in the post-COVID future?
Well, it's going to be interesting. Sorry, go on.
And I was just going to say, what are you doing? And if there's anything, you know, that you want to share with what you're doing at Sony?
Well, I think it's the first thing we've realized, like everybody on the call, I think we're all realizing that the work at the office versus work at home needs rethinking. I think two things happened quite quickly for us as a leadership team, for me personally, and as a whole global management group. Number one, we realized in March it wasn't a competition to see how many Zoom calls you could schedule, how many tasks you could hand out to people, and how many check-ins you could have with the teams. And that was the first quite important realization as a leadership team, because people needed space to adjust to it. I think the second thing that I've realized and we've realized is that my problems and the challenges I'm facing as a leader are nothing in comparison to my team's. Their financial challenges, their personal challenges, their situational challenges.
Yeah.
So understanding people and that empathy with people is how we need to take, is the mindset companies need to take going into what this post-COVID looks like. Now, no one really knows how many hours a week people will work from home, whether Microsoft Teams or Zoom or Skype for Business and all those technical questions. But I think if we take an empathetic view of people and understanding personalities and challenges and building our businesses around not just titles but also the people that are in those titles, I think we'll come out of this a lot stronger, a lot more connected, and a lot more human. And that can only be a good thing for companies, and it can only be a good thing for performance.
Lovely. Love that. Thank you so much. There's so many common threads coming through this, but the biggest thing I'm hearing is about being human and thinking about our well-being and our customers' well-being. I'm seeing you nod there, Sharwe, and I was going to bring you back into the conversation to say, you know, what are you doing to ensure you retain brand trust with your customers now and going forward? And obviously, if you want to comment on the last piece, do as well. We are just slightly running out of time, as we knew we would in such a brilliant conversation. But yeah, over to you, shall we?
Yeah, I've touched quite upon about employees and customers. And of course, you know, this unusual times as an energy company, our duty is also to keep the business going, to keep the lights on. Yeah, people don't normally think about it. It can be taken for granted, but that's our job. So I think the business continuity is quite important. And also, you know, when we talk about the customer, they are also human. So I quite like the previous point made about, so our CMO used to say, it doesn't matter whether you're B2B or B2C or B2B2C, it's actually business and the brand to human. So I think as well as taking care of the well-being of our people, that's including, you know, our employee, customer and stakeholder community, the bigger piece is also, you know, to serve what is necessary, the essential part, you know, keep the lights on and our retail stations throughout in the over 70 markets throughout open. And we also initiated something like, you know, 15,000 retail sites in 30 markets actually provide, you know, free drinks and the sandwiches to health workers, to those essential workers while keeping the society moving. So those are the things we can do. Some of our business actually could also turn into something that is very relevant for this pandemic. For instance, our chemical plants produce IPA, which is an essential part actually to producing sanitizer. And our scientists at the beginning in Europe, in our technology center, using their technology actually produce 3D printed goggles for health workers because the shortage of those. So I think as a brand, as a business, we try to be of service at this challenging time to try to do the part that we could to help the community and the society at large. Hopefully, you know, this is not the selling moment, it is the serving moment.
That's nice. I like that. Very nice. We've got questions coming in and then we're going to have to wrap up because we're already towards time. But I have to ask this question because it's from our director in Scotland. Do you think marketing will play a central role to the recovery and therefore take it more seriously by business and society? I'm sure you could all answer that, but I'm going to come to you, Craig, on that one to get your take, point of view.
Yes. Is a short answer, I think, Graham. I think apart from everything we've heard about humanity and sort of changes in leadership style, this pandemic has given every organisation an inflection point, a cause to really think about what their business is there for and how they can really add value. And you've heard it just through this call, the sort of the use of or reference to customers and customers' lives as well as employees' lives is much more preeminent. And so marketeers should be at the forefront of making sure that some of these changes stick. I wouldn't underestimate the risk of sliding back to sort of some of the previous behaviors. I hate to say that in this call, but I think it will happen in some places. And so it will be up to marketeers more than ever to step up and be the voice of the customer, sometimes the lone voice of the customer, and sometimes railing against the tide. To make sure that some of these changes really do stick.
Yeah, love that. Agree. Did someone else just talk there? Sorry, there was a little bit of feedback. No, fine. It could also be the frozen in the background. Thank you, Craig. We've talked a lot in this pandemic since it started, and absolutely in this call about the power of collaboration. So, Mike, do you think that's something we're going to see more of in the future?
I think that for us, it's been a real eye-opener the last 10, 12 weeks, the type of partners. You know, you've got your standard partners, your business partners, your global partners that you trust and you work with day in, day out. But we're suddenly realizing that actually the partnership ecosystem's been turned on its head a little bit. And I think for marketeers, it's going to be about how do we keep ourselves open to new partnerships, new service driven partnerships that have the customer's needs at the heart of what they do. And so the example I gave before about, you know, things like the convergence of music and gaming, the convergence of music and film, the convergence of music and e-commerce, the convergence of music and pretty much everything around is going to become an even bigger part of our thought process than it has been for a number of years. And that's exciting. And that's exciting. I guess even for banking, even for all sectors, I think the ability to see meaningful collaborations in areas that you previously had not considered as a business, like that's going to take a bit of a leap of faith, a bit of imagination, and like was mentioned before, maybe swimming against the internal tide of what you're used to doing. But I think it will deliver meaningful results and ultimately meaningful rewards for the consumer and for the brand. You know,
Mike, I love the way you say even for banking.
I know. I was about
what, sorry, Derek.
Just to build on that, interestingly, we have just launched a game. Now, it happens to be at the right time, but we have launched a game which is downloadable on most gaming platforms, which is all about financial education for kids, but it's an enjoyable game that the people are enjoying playing. But it just shows you that collaboration, so we collaborated a couple of years back now with a gaming company to develop this game. So we have collaborated with a games company, which you wouldn't have thought from banking, and it just so happened that we launched it during the lockdown, so perfect timing in a way. But that's actually performing really, really well. There's been loads of downloads of that. So it just shows you that even for banking, you know, these partnerships are really important.
Well done.
I think point well made there. Without dwelling, we're going to move to the final thing, which is all of you. I would love a key learning or piece of advice that you would like to leave our brilliant audience with. And I'm going to start with you, Juhi. What's your final piece of advice?
So my advice to everyone who's closely associated with marketing is think out of the box, because what we know of the traditional marketing mix is completely going to change now. It's not going to be the way we've always planned it. So it's, of course, more digital, but there could be other things that come up as well. We see that changing now. So think out of the box, experiment. Now's the time.
Love that. That came up yesterday in a webinar as well. Very good. Thank you so much. Adriana, coming to you in New York. What's your final piece of advice?
I think it would be to get better and better at listening. Listen well to everyone, your customers, your employees, your colleagues. You know, in the US, we ask, how are you, constantly, but we never really expect much of an answer. And I think now is the time to actually listen to that answer. So that would be what I hope everyone takes away from this.
I love that. And maybe ask again, how are you really? So you really get that response. Yeah, no, absolutely. Thank you. Carl, coming to you in Hong Kong. What's your final piece of advice?
So it's less of an advice. It's more around maybe a personal learning during this period to be more conscientious. That's what I'm taking away. And from the panel today, we can hear that's a team and thread. But if we're more conscientious, we will support our staff, our people, both the frontline. We'll support our customers, and hopefully we'll also support everything else which is good, like the environment. So I'm hoping that being conscientious is going to be a team which takes off.
Yeah, love that. Thank you. Derek, might as well stay in banking.
I think for me, one piece of advice that I heard right at the start of this that stuck with me is don't let the perfect get in the way of the possible. And I think that's been true all the way along. I think from us, from our point of view, the right message at the right time has been much more important than the message being perfect. So relevance and timeliness are really crucial. It's never going to be perfect, you know, and I think you've just got to kind of get it right, but it doesn't need to be perfect.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. That's very much been our philosophy. Xiaowei, what about you? Coming to you in Singapore, what's your final piece of advice or takeaway?
Right, unmute. I would say, at the brand level or business level, I would say truly living the brand purpose, and it's the perfect moment to put that into testimony, and how really, you know, translate that purpose into customer value proposition. On the personal level, as I mentioned earlier, it's really about the learner mindset. I would leave one word to be started to say progress with time.
Nice. Thank you. Thank you so much. Mike, what about you? What's your final piece?
Well, I think everyone's kind of talked about similar themes. I think for me, it would be having empathy. Like, if we boil what we're all saying, this is a time of empathy, like more so than ever. And I think having an openness to new ideas and new ways of doing things. So empathy on the human side and openness on the business side, I think.
I love that. And you started with two words and you finished with two words. So very consistent. Very good. Last but certainly not means least, Craig, what's your final piece of advice?
Well, I was actually going to say what Adriana said. We've got two of these, one of these for a reason. So, I think the learning for me is that by really, really coming together as human beings, you can collaborate with it and create a clear sense of purpose. And when you've got that, you can create, you can inspire, and you can really do anything.
I love that. Brilliant. Thank you. And on that note, we have truly run out of time. So thank you all so much for taking part in our second global conversation. I hope you all enjoyed it. I certainly did and learned so much. And I can see from the feedback already coming through, our audience did as well. So thank you. You've given your time and your insight and your wisdom, and I hope that you will again when we do these in the future. So brilliant. There were so many learnings, and we, as always, will collect them and share them with our members. But the big thing that came through is, you know, we've got to look after ourselves, each other, and our people and our customers, and that came through in a big way. And be yourself, because quite frankly, everyone else is taken. Hey.